Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
This episode of Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Audible, and you listeners can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get started with a free 30-day trial and get a free audiobook.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we bring you the blurst of times. I am your host, Bob Mackey, and I brought my own mic, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
King of painful dentistry, Chris Antista.
Henry Gilbert, and after this podcast, I'll be socially unpopular, more so.
And today's episode is Last Exit to Springfield.
Dental plan!
Lisa needs braces.
Dental plan!
Lisa needs braces.
Dental plan!
Lisa needs braces.
And this episode aired on March 11th, 1993, and Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real life history.
Cult leader David Koresh declares war on federal agents surrounding his compound. Beavis and Butthead is pulled off the air for production delays.
Gasp.
And impotent white rage tops the box office with Michael Douglas's Falling Down.
Falling Down. I don't know how... Okay, here's the thing. It's weird. I enjoy that movie. Mm-hmm. It makes a really bad argument, but there's a lot of fun scenes.
There are.
These were actually used,
yeah.
Me.
I feel like the guy does a bunch of stuff throughout that movie. It's about a guy who goes insane.
Yes.
Based on the plight of the white working man in America, mm-hmm. Everybody. Am I right? Mm-hmm. He goes insane on several instances, and some of them you're like, he's a little sketchy, but in the end he kills a Nazi, so I think we're supposed to forgive him
for
everything
he does.
That's
how they define it. Like, well, he's not a Nazi. How do we know? He kills a Nazi and says, I disagree with you.
Yeah.
Like, I would have got you. But he goes on this rant of like, there's so much wrong with the world. This golf course, you should be playgrounds. And there's like a really long scene like, this fast food doesn't look like the pictures.
Yeah.
This coat costs too much.
It was what if the complaints of a stand-up in the 80s became a militant white man?
I can't understand the guy in the drive-through speaker. What's the deal with this? And he pulls out a gun.
I mean, it is a very striking picture of, you know, Michael Douglas with the cropped, very tight haircut, short sleeve shirt with a tie in the briefcase.
The movie, I think, really, what really saves it for me is what could be cut out completely. It's the story of Officer Mick Lastay on the job. It's literally the biggest cliche in every cop movie, and it's happening throughout.
It's what I always think. I got a little lake house, going to do some fishing. Like, shut up. Jesus.
Meanwhile, Beavis and Butthead, this isn't for fire or for the...
It's the only reason I mentioned it.
Frog,
I know we talk a
right?
lot about animation, is that I forgot that Beavis and Butthead succumbed to that as well. Like, not being able to get things done on time, and I think they started airing episodes and realized they were going to have to... We're not getting any more.
Yeah, and Mike Judge famously hates a lot of the really early ones, and they are bad, and he won't let them be available on any format. He's like, burn them.
I do believe that changed. I think they announced a complete set, finally, that has
really?
The movie, the most recent... Weirdo season 15 years after the last one.
There was this one set in like 2005. It was called The History of Beavis and Butthead, and Mike Judge had it pulled off the shelves because it had a lot of shorts and sketches and bits that he did not like.
I'm sure he's less precious given how little money is left to make off these characters.
That's true. He's got the King of the Hill fortune, baby.
He never needs money again, man.
I love Mike Judge.
I love Beavis and Butthead.
Yes. Even though we're living in Idiocracy now, and I feel like he rotted upon us.
We just talked about it on 30, 2010, Beavis and Butthead, Do America just turned 20.
Oh, I love that movie.
Really funny and on Netflix right now.
Okay, I will watch that tonight, I think.
Speaking of a really funny episode,
this
episode of Simpsons, as they mentioned many times on the commentary, is often in top 5 or top 10 lists of greatest episode of The Simpsons ever. At the time of recording, it was regularly at the top of those types of lists. Last Exit to Springfield was. And I don't know.
I think I'm with you on this.
Well, it is so wacky
yeah.
and so packed, like, nonstop with jokes
mm-hmm.
that it hits so many of them perfectly, but
yeah.
it's not a story.
No, the third act is, like, 3 minutes long.
Yeah, the third act is actually very weak, but I don't know. It's obviously amazing,
yeah.
great direction.
Well, I don't want to complain. I feel like it's still a great episode, probably in the top 20, maybe top
sure.
15 for me, but there are so many episodes in season 4 I like a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what pushes this over the edge for a lot of people.
I think it's, well, because it has taken on a life of its own. Like, so many
yeah.
things in this episode are now memed and remixed and
that is true.
And put into a ton of stuff. But I think this is not so much, in terms of coherence, is not a great episode, but is filled with moments and is one of the best cartoons I've ever seen The Simpsons
yeah.
put
it
out.
It is super cartoony.
Sometimes it feels like a Halloween special.
Well, it's of like movie reference into movie reference
yeah.
into movie
yeah.
reference. Like, it doesn't take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... And this episode is credited to Kogan and Wolodarski. It's their last episode. They left the series after that. But we've said it on previous ones. I
yeah.
feel pretty certain that Conan O'Brien is the rewriter.
Henry, I was a Conan truther like you.
But
on the
no.
commentary, they specifically mentioned things that they each wrote.
Okay.
So maybe Conan rewrote a lot of it. Like, this was their last script, and they were not on the show after this. But then Al G mentions, I think, in the clip show commentary that, like, even he was not doing the final edits on episodes towards the end of season 4. That was, like, Merkin's crew cleaning it up and
oh,
editing
wow.
it and things
oh,
like
that's
that.
True,
so
that's true, because... Well, like, when you say the final cut, you mean the Merkin team that was writing season 5 is then doing the last edit on season
yeah.
4 just to get the audio ready.
They're doing post-production, so
mm-hmm.
they're making a lot of choices that are affecting these episodes. So I feel like once these were all written, everyone moved on, including Al Jean and Mike Reese.
And I also feel like there are, like, eight funny lines in here that I'm just like, well, no, that mouth doesn't fit
mm-hmm.
at all.
There's a lot of them.
There's a whole lot of them.
I notice them even more now that I'm doing the show, and it's
mm-hmm.
really annoying. It's like, oh, God, what was that line
yeah,
originally?
Yeah, I think I originally... like chalked that up to, like, well, the technology wasn't there, not being reused animation, but you see it all the time
yeah.
now.
And also, hats off to Mark Kirkland. I don't think we give him enough credit. This is his episode.
Yeah.
And he did a great job. And it's not just him, but I think we don't shout him out enough because a lot of, I mean, when you're working with, like, David Silverman and
mm-hmm.
Jim Reardon, it's hard to rise above the level they set, the standard
yeah,
they set.
I think this is the best piece of animation
mm-hmm.
The Simpsons has put out.
Even, like, Wes Archer and Rich Moore went
some
on
the best
to
bits,
bigger
yeah.
things. And, but meanwhile, like, Kirkland's just been the steady hand of The Simpsons. He's the John Swartzwelder of the directors,
yeah,
and he's
yeah.
directed the most episodes.
Even John left, though, so he's
yeah.
still sticking around.
Kirkland still is at it, and I think, yeah, he's underappreciated for that reason, because he never left. And he didn't do a different thing you could really appreciate. And he wasn't the amazing animator that David Silverman
yeah.
is, or Brad Bird, or Rich Moore, or Jim Reardon.
When you're working with those guys, you must just feel like shit every day, you know? Even if you are good.
And also in today's age of no non-unionized anything,
yes.
it's funny to see unions at the center of a story.
I have a lot to say about that. Let's get started with...
This episode has some thoughts on unions.
Because the McBain bit? Is so well done, and
it's
so violent and so visual that we can't even play a clip from it here.
And Chris does not believe McBain is an ongoing story,
no.
but McBain is avenging Scoey's death, and this is Senator Mendoza. I know what you said before, Chris. Either explanation is fine, either theory works, but I want to believe they knew this and were planning out
this
a McBain story.
This is the same Mendoza
yeah.
who he kills at the end of the movie in the Herb Powell episode.
Yeah, but
that
it's the same itchy and scratchy in every episode. They're cliches that follow beats.
I'm
get
just saying,
Mendoza.
I agree with what I still believe what I said last time, which is that if the writers didn't care, the animators did, and they are animating
yeah.
the same movie.
Yeah, it's somebody cared. Somebody cared.
And they're already getting close to the point where there is a McBain film, and they won't call him McBain for a while. They're gonna
mm-hmm.
they're gonna start calling him Raymere Wolfcastle.
There
by
is
the 100th episode. That's when they're doing it.
There's a Christopher Walken action movie called McBain, and Riff
that's
Tracks
right.
has done it. It's worth watching because it's awful. And I'm like, this is what robbed us of McBain.
I forget
this?
That you can just do that. Like when someone eventually like wrote Hamster Huey and the Gooey Kablooey.
Oh.
Because Bill Watterson never bothered to copyright the parody thing on his comic strip. But you can do that, too.
So somebody did that?
Yeah.
Oh,
I believe
wow.
they did.
I had
they
no
finally
idea.
Wrote that book.
And I love the under-the-radar line of 10 times more addictive than marijuana. Yeah. That's such a great line, because it's not addictive. That's the joke, people.
That was also a changed joke, another ADR line.
But it's a great line.
It's a great line. I loved it.
That's one of the few that I'm like, I bet this is better than the one they replaced.
Yeah. And as a kid, I probably believed that like marijuana is bad.
I don't know anything about unions other than what was in The Wire season 2. in this.
Race of Buck.
That is it. But the whole episode really does kick off almost a great transition to Burns laughing. Oh, so good.
I also want to say the McBain line of ice to see you.
Ice to see you.
I wanted to double check. Arnold does not say that in he says all those ice puns in Batman and Robin, but he doesn't
much
say
worse.
That.
I was going to ask that too.
The closest he has is let's kick some ice.
I love McBain busting out of that impossibly small Venus de Milo sculpture. Like, I didn't notice that was a joke until this time, I think.
And then the line of nobody's really that evil, too.
It's great.
This is also a mean episode with, like, super violent opening and then...
It's what the most violence I think I've seen on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
It seems more like a Halloween episode. I've never seen that many frames of animation for someone getting murdered.
Yes.
And there's blood everywhere.
Well, there's blood everywhere, then... But that is in the fictional world.
I think that's how they got away with it.
But then Burns is laughing.
So good.
Oh, let's hear it.
I love it. Sam.
That is one evil dude.
It's just a movie, son. There's nobody that evil in real life.
It's showing you what this whole episode shows you how much effort Harry Shearer used to put into Burns before he was just.
But Burns is laughing at a window washer about to fall, and they're nice enough to close the window so you only hear him fall. But like that man's dead, so that's one real life death in this episode that just happened. It's actually all in this scene. Three different deaths are mentioned.
I think Burns killing him through inactivity is especially a cruel touch. Like I'm not going to get up.
But then the next dead body they talk about is the old union leader.
Very clearly dead.
A reference to Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah, so I looked this up. The corpse in the football field is specifically to where union boss Jimmy Hoffa, who disappeared and who was the subject of a Jack Nicholson
Danny DeVito
is the director. Yeah, that's right. Film Hoffa. So the urban legend was that he was buried in the Giants Stadium in New Jersey. No body was found, though, when they demolished the stadium in 2010.
Well,
so
that's why I watched the Richard Kuklinski documentary, The Iceman Cometh. Hmm. And he's like, I don't know what happened to him, but I'll tell you what I heard. And then he goes on to tell the most specific story ever that I really want to believe that involves him like being crushed up into the very cars he was doing something with and scattered out into the ocean.
So the joke there is, which will keep coming, that unions are the most crooked thing, and they're run by the mafia. That is the joke of this
episode.
It is
a very, like, rooted in the 70s, and I will say, I think this show, it's not their fault. They kind of take unions for granted. I mean, unions are such a small fabric of our society today.
All the producers are part of a union.
They're part of a writer's union, and they made a big stink when that union was challenged and things like that.
You won't pay us for webisodes?
Yes, exactly. And like royalties and stuff. But I have to say, like, as an adult, I have 2 degrees, right? Mm-hmm. As an adult, before I got this job a month ago, my new job, I had benefits at a job for all of 10 months. That was the only time I had health benefits, dental benefits, sick days, vacation days, things like that. That is our modern reality. It is so hard to find a job that actually gives you vacation days, gives you benefits. And just watching this episode was like, wow, as a kid, I didn't get any of this. Yeah. And I wondered if it was a lot easier just to find a job with benefits in 92, 93.
I just, like, I don't know. I forget where I read the most about workers' unions of the early 1900s, just where like the American worker needed a lot of defense.
Yeah. I mean, like, because like unions
an 80-hour work week's not good enough for you.
So like, if you hate unions and activists and things like that, they created your 8-hour workday.
Yeah.
They made it so children don't get worked to death out of the womb. They made it so you can take a sick day if your employer gives you one, which you don't have to in
the
Ohio
reality
anymore.
Is here people were for the opposite of that. Like
they wanted
it the other way around, but this is the only level-headed one. It makes me laugh so much. It's very dated. It's one of my favorite things whenever
it reflects the 80s economy.
Totally. Like being afraid of Japan.
That's my last left-wing rant, by the way.
Come on, crack those atoms. You, turn out those pockets. Atoms.
And this is a flashback of Burns looking back on his grandfather and the plant he ran in 1909, which almost puts a very clear age on Mr. Burns.
They make him only 90, I think. And I'm like, only 90?
Only 90.
I believe in the hair episode, he said, like, I'm 82. Only 82.
Something like that, yeah.
I love this clip, and I love this. Is it squeaky voice teen? Is the
unit? Yes. Yeah.
Come on, crack those atoms. You, turn out those pockets. Atoms. One, two, three, four. Six of them. Take him away.
You can't treat the working man this way. One day we'll form a union and get the fair and equitable treatment we deserve. Then we'll go too far and get corrupt and shiftless. And the Japanese will eat us alive.
The Japanese? Those sandal-wearing goldfish tenders? Bosh, flimshaw.
Flash forward.
If only we had listened to that boy instead of walling him up in the abandoned coke oven. Well, I'm going to avenge my grandfather. We'll take on that greedy union and we'll get back our dental plan.
He pointed also, it to it like a name in the phone book.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want back.
He just picked one thing to make the fight
over. But I found it fascinating as someone who worked for a Japanese company and remembering, let's call it the Japanic Panic. Of the early 80s.
I think it's literally called the Yellow Panic.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think that, there's some of that in 1942 comics that I remember reading something about the Yellow Panic characters.
In this case, it was more economic.
When I did grow up, my dad was really proud that he had a Sony TV because it was a little pricier, but it'll never break because it's the most quality, high efficient item on the planet. So were their cars, so were their cameras, so were their phones. They were pioneering everything in video games, and they were pioneering everything in animation. And none of that is the case now.
That's true. I mean, there's a joke in Back to the Future 3, which we just watched not too long ago, where Doc is scoffing at a thing made in Japan, and Marty's like, they make the best stuff.
They make the best stuff, and like, it's very weird. That was the attitude at the time the show was written.
There was also this great joke in the one of my favorite movies, Albert Brooks' is Defending Your Life.
Oh, that movie's so good.
They're flashing back to mistakes he made in his life, and one of them was this guy trying to sell him Japanese watches, Swatch, before coming in. Or Seiko watches, I think it was. So I was like,
the Casio watch was the finest watch.
But Albert Brooks is like, the Japanese, come on. You tell me you got a Swiss watch, I'll buy that. Come on. But they don't know what to do. I'm sorry. I'm not buying it. No. And it would have been worth $12 million.
And we should point out that there is a nuclear power plant that Burns' grandfather is opening decades before any atoms were split.
There was no nuclear power
in 1909.
There's a joke there where overlooked that someone is stealing atoms.
Yeah.
It's an atom smashing place of just guys hitting hammers onto anvils for nothing to smash atoms. It makes no sense,
and
it's beautiful.
Maybe this is like a senile, like deluded fantasy of Burns. I'm not sure if it really happened, but I love just like the individual drawings of atoms in the guy's turned out pocket. It's great.
But the mouth movements for the corrupt and shiftless sign are all off.
They are,
They're not. But his Japanese reply is fitting. If that fits the mouth movement, so I wonder what was changed.
His inflection. Well, he is alive.
And again, they killed that kid too. He says they walled him up in the old go-go.
He presumably starved to death. Yeah,
he's dead too. So in this one just scene, they're like three real deaths happened in the world.
Two killed by Burns.
Anybody happy? The coke oven?
It's a coke oven is like, I think coke is like, okay, so a commenter is going to kill us for this, but it is like a kind of coal, like a kind of thing that burns, I believe.
Burns.
Yes. So you don't want to be walled up in that.
I like how Burns calls them the greedy union. We're going to get that.
Greedy union.
I think that's why they make it. It's kind of the Simpsons definitely in the 90s had a both sides suck attitude.
Yeah.
You'll see that quite a lot in Sideshow Bob Roberts. But it's in this too of, well, Burns is the most evil, bloodless billionaire capitalist in the world. He's horrible. But we can't just have, it's not funny if the unions are awesome. The unions also have to be crooked and run inefficiently by idiots. So.
I think Homer is too stupid to be crooked, though, in this episode.
Oh, he constantly brags about being crooked.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Got a flash of the B story of the now painless dentistry, formerly painful dentistry.
Right. How often do you brush, Ralph?
3 times a day, sir.
Why must you turn my office into a house of lies?
Mm-hmm. You're right. I don't brush. I don't brush.
Let's look at a picture book. The Big Book of British Smiles.
There's so many lines here that I ended up quoting forever. And I think that's why it's that time. Why must you turn blank into a house of lies is something I've said a billion times.
I have so many. I have so much to say about this.
House of Lies is now a show on Showtime.
I mean, wow. Well, not anymore.
House of Lies. Oh, my bad.
But the British teeth just became, I feel like I'd never heard of joke about bad British teeth in American stuff until this show. And it is a core joke to Austin Powers.
It is like part of his costume. Yeah. Yes. So this dentist character, does he have a name?
No, he does not.
He's delightfully
sinister. But I do know the behind-the-scenes story, I think. Bob's
please!
Yeah, I mean, so this is another instance of a late season 4 episode that was supposed to have a guest star, but they couldn't find one, and they just did it anyways. Mm. They wanted Anthony Hopkins, you know, Hannibal Lecter, and they wanted Clint Eastwood. They both turned it down. And so then they wanted Anthony Perkins, who played... Norman Bates in Psycho.
Bates.
Unfortunately, he died of AIDS. So they just got Hank to do it.
He died September 1992. Yeah. This was March.
Oh,
that
would have been so good.
So I have a big book of British Smile story. Mm-hmm. I flew to the UK for my first time last year. Mm-hmm. And the first person to greet me at customs...
Freshen your drink, governor.
...could have been in this book. And I felt like, I feel so bad. I'm thinking of a Simpsons joke, and I'm sorry about your teeth. But I think we Americans are more obsessed with teeth than...
We really are.
Yeah.
I mean, the dental industry is bullshit. But I think... I mean, it's not. You need your teeth.
Your teeth hurt as much as mine. Kind of wish I had some dental insurance.
Swish some gasoline, Chris. Mm-hmm. You'll be fine.
But yeah, in other cultures, like... Japan also has kind of a, like, they don't care as much about teeth either, but it's not like, the British smiles is a joke you could, it comes in the same place as the Austin Powers joke of just seeing films starring British movie stars, and if you look at their teeth, they're like, your teeth are fucked up. Like,
yeah, they let you on TV? Yeah, there's a weird feeling.
I remember Christian Bale talked about how, to do American Psycho, he had to have a perfect body for it. He was supposed to be this... perfect vessel for a horrible thing, and that included he had to have perfect teeth, so they fixed his teeth for it because he's that committed to it. In an interview, Christian Bale's Welsh, and he's like, I miss my old teeth, I wish I had my ugly teeth.
My teeth suck, but they're and I've heard him be made fun of for it, they're about as bad as Ricky Gervais's. That's it.
He's got kind of like a fang kind of thing going
it's
on, but
because in hindsight I don't have any anger at my parents for almost anything except for the idea that, like, why didn't I have braces? Like, my teeth are fucked up.
I was
going to
ask about that. Did any of us have braces? Chris
no,
hasn't.
I did.
I had
perfect.
I had the entire works. I had, okay, so first they put in a palate. Okay, first they have to pull out a bunch of teeth.
Right.
And then they put in a palate expander, which, if you don't know, it's this thing that sits in the roof of your mouth.
Yeah.
It's meant to gradually spread open your upper jaw.
Wow.
And so every day my mom had to, like, put a little key in and turn it so it would gradually push my teeth outwards. Ugh. And then I had braces for about 3 years, and now I don't wear a retainer anymore, so I'm sure they're all shifting around, and I'm ruining all those years of work. But
it was, I remember, like, I was... born in this era, we were in the last days of like the serious headgear that Lisa will see later.
Yeah, I didn't know anyone who had that.
There were like 3-4 people I saw in my
school.
Well,
that headgear is, I think, partially inspired by Al Jean talks about how he wore that headgear that he on the 3 Men in a Comic Book commentary. Executive producer Al Jean talks about how he felt the nerdiest he ever did as a kid when he was at a comic convention wearing one of those head pieces. But I didn't have it. I like to think that. It's not that my teeth are perfect, like they are, you know, slightly to the side. Well, now they look horrible. Don't even look at my teeth. But I always feel in my mouth like, well, this tooth is kind of to the side. It could be straightened out. But I definitely think my dad would have just said, that's bullshit. Nobody really needs braces. I'm not spending money on this.
I begged for braces because everybody else had them, and I thought everybody had a cool dentist story. And then there was one dentist place in my area. They were offering a free Game Boy. To any kid who got braces.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And like my parents wouldn't get me a Game Boy. Maybe they'll get me braces. So I begged and begged and begged and begged.
Also, I think most dental plans would not cover braces because it's like a cosmetic thing.
I think they can argue against that now. Huh. But I know I can't get it because I've tried when I did have dental insurance. But those are...
But then Lisa finding out she'll be so even more unpopular if she has braces.
I'm so afraid little Lisa is going to need braces.
Oh no, I'll be socially unpopular. More so.
That really does seem like it should have been Anthony Hopkins, Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah. It would have been great. Why'd he turn it down?
I had it written down. He's delightfully sinister for no reason.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was my reflection as a kid in general. Just like, oh, this will make me more unpopular. I'm already at a deficit here. I don't need thicker glasses or
part of that
there's
social,
one kid I could pick on still. That's
part of
it.
That social deficit, Henry, was your love for wrestling.
Yes.
Now stay tuned for professional wrestling live from the Springfield Grapplarium. Tonight, a Texas death match. Dr. Hillbilly versus the Iron Yuppie. One man will actually be unmasked and killed in the ring.
Huh. Well, I hope they kill that Iron Yuppie. Thinks he's so big.
Homer, Lisa needs braces.
Don't worry. We won a dental plan in the strike of 88. That's where I got this scar.
What do we want?
More equitable treatment in the hands of management.
When do we want it?
Soon.
Where's my burrito? Where's my burrito? Where's my burrito?
Oh! See, that's not a joke I love, but I see reference constantly.
It's something that phrase, where's my burrito, that chant runs through my head every time I'm waiting for food.
Yeah,
every time.
One day it's just going to slip out and you look like a total dick.
Unless I'm at Chipotle, it'll be fine.
Until I moved to California, I'd never seen a taco truck before.
This does feel like an LA writer-y thing. Like a taco truck.
For them to pin it to 1988, too, like that was the strike of 88, so that was 28 years ago.
And also, I think there was a writer's strike in 88, wasn't there? A writer's guild strike,
Or
I remember the writer's strike well.
And by the way, in a real Texas death match in wrestling.
That's what this is.
It is not that a character, it is not that a wrestler is killed. Mm-hmm. A Texas death match is hard to say. It's the same as a last man standing match, meaning there's no pinfall, no submission. It's just one wrestler, if one wrestler fails to get to a standing 10 count, he loses. So it's just about like clobbering the person until they're so unconscious they can't get up for 10 seconds.
Standing 10 count means the one person's on the ground, the other person is standing.
Not to say that there haven't been double countouts in a Texas death match.
Oh, my word. Let's move back to the...
That's a matter for Cheap Podcast, I think.
That tooth going through Lisa's head, one of my favorite visuals.
I mean, I lost a tooth, I knocked it out, and I have a really weird tooth thing. And it all makes... It's all kind of painful for me to watch, that I want to go to the dentist so bad. But I just had to commit a light fraud to get health care just today.
And I've never used a
sprinkling of fraud.
I've never used a pay toilet like Homer did to get that. Have you ever used a pay
toilet? I've never used a pay toilet in my life.
They're all over the city, but...
Yeah, they have those like pay toilet booths, but I'm like, there's got to be some serious shit going on in there.
I can think of a billion better places to shoot up and jerk off. Like, why would I pay to...
Or have a baby.
I could either pay for this or get a 10-piece McNuggets and then just shit there, you know?
But let's move into the real... dental plan.
Welcome, brothers, to Local 643. As you know, our president, Chucky Fitzhugh, ain't been seen lately. We're all praying he'll turn up soon, alive and well. All right, but seriously, we have to vote on Burns' new contract. It's basically the same deal, except we get a free keg of beer for our meeting.
Yay!
And in exchange for that, we have to give up our dental plan.
So long, dental plan! Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
Dental plan.
Love the Zoom.
Lisa needs braces.
Dental plan.
I can't do the whole
thing. It goes on for 10 more seconds.
It does. I don't know.
So we are edging closer and closer towards the rake joke. I said rake joke, by the way.
Yes.
And it is funny because
there's
this
no such thing as a funny rake joke, Bob.
There is at least one inside Joe Bob. But it's funny that we treasure these moments so much, but really it is desperate writers running out of time and needing to fill time, and they just did this as an experiment. Like, will this fly? And I believe Kogan and Wolodarski, this was in their original script.
Yeah.
And they said on the commentary they had to explain to other writers, including Al Jean, why this was funny, because they like the other writers thought it was a typo, it was a mistype, but they're like, no, this is why it was funny. So they had to sell this idea to the higher ups, to Al Jean and whatnot.
Is it because like the repetition is the funny part, or
it's like why would this repetition be funny? Did you copy paste this too many times?
The Zoom makes it funny, and it's the, I think I mentioned it an episode or two ago, but the escalation of Homer's brain trying to figure the world out is increasingly funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we had not released, I mean, at least in my experience, I had not seen a joke like this before. At least this prolonged.
You still get a nice butt crack joke with Homer, too. Yeah.
Dropping the pencil.
Thank Christ.
In there.
There's still more of it.
Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
If we give up our dental plan, I'll have to pay for Lisa's braces. People, stop. We can't give up our dental plan. Lenny. Without the dental plan, you wouldn't have that diamond in your tooth.
Yoink!
Yoink!
And Gummy Joe, where would you be without the dental plan? I wouldn't have old Chomper here, that's for sure. You know what I think of this contract? This! Fight! Yeah!
You can't rip it up.
Who is that firebrand, Smithers?
That's Homer Simpson, sir.
Simpson, huh? New man?
Actually, sir, he thwarted your campaign for governor. You ran over his son. He saved the plant from meltdown. His wife painted you in the nude.
Doesn't ring a bell.
That's almost the end of the Burns not recognizing Homer joke.
I think they're trying to seal that up, and I think for this episode to work, Burns can't recognize Homer or understand that he's stupid, because every stupid move Homer makes is considered a power play by Burns.
It wouldn't work if Burns doesn't know it, but this is also them fed up with doing the joke that Burns doesn't remember.
Because they referenced real things that all real things that happened. Yeah. And they haven't done that before.
Who shot Mr. Burns is what kills it, because that is when he remembers, like, who the devil are you?
The baby that shot me.
Yeah, he does remember all those people, but he needs to forget here. But also, the going through all that stuff, first off, the logo for the union that is the mix of the performing arts plus bakers plus
jazz dancers.
Yeah.
I love that. And then Carl is the secret leader of the union.
Yeah.
He nominates Homer to be in charge, but he's the leader. Like, he is the one calling for votes. He is the one organizing the strikes. Carl, but I think he nominates people to take the heat.
He is Homer's supervisor, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
I move that Homer Simpson be our new union president. All in favor?
Aye!
All opposed?
Nay.
Congratulations, Homer!
Yay! Hey, what does this job pay?
Nothing.
Don't!
Unless you're crooked.
Woohoo!
I love how the scene ends with two beer glasses like clinking into each other. Two beer steins.
That's how I want to die.
Being smashed on both sides of your head.
Yeah, what a great...
And it was the second yoink in two episodes in a row. We first heard it in Duffless. Now we're hearing it here.
That was the first yoink, historically. Duffless?
Duffless, yep. And this is number two. And old Gummy Joe, I miss him. He never showed back up again.
I hope we never get to a place where Prospector characters aren't funny.
Yeah, I mean, that is I know this. It's a Walter Brennan impression, so look that one up.
Brennan.
Yeah, he's a classic old cowboy, old West actor.
One of my favorite Will Ferrell things I ever saw was it was on the Will Ferrell DVD Best of SNL, but it was one that never aired. It was one of those dress rehearsal extras they put on there. It was, "Welcome to the Army, guys. You guys are joining the Army, and you're going to send you on a mission. And we've assigned you the old prospector, too." And they were just pretending that an old prospector is on every mission team in the Army.
I've not seen this.
Until at the end, they admit, like, okay, he's just an actor we hired. And of course, Jimmy Fallon is giggling the entire time.
So of course.
I've seen
that's
this.
That's what he did.
But
it's very good.
I'm skipping ahead. I just Homer and the innuendo, like the classic comedy jokes that come from Homer and Burns negotiating.
This is pretty great.
There are two scenes like this. I like this one a lot, though.
We don't have to be adversaries, Homer. We both want a fair union contract.
Why is Mr. Burns being so nice to me?
And if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Wait a minute. Is he coming on to me?
I mean, if I should slip something into your pocket, what's the harm?
Oh, my God, he is coming on to me.
After all, negotiations make strange bedfellows.
Sorry, Mr. Burns, but I don't go in for these backdoor shenanigans. Sure, I'm flattered, maybe even a little curious. But the answer is no.
When Homer says backdoor shenanigans, it only means butt sex.
Yeah, like, it sounds like just one big Tobias Funke monologue from Arrested
really
Development.
He does. Yeah. He is kind of curious about having sex with Mr. Burns.
I love that. Maybe
when offered the chance, he's like, maybe.
It's fine to be curious, but with an 80-year-old man. Sex with old people is gross.
You're going to have sex with a man. Like, it wouldn't. Why would Burns be your...
He should have fucked Carl.
There'll be no measure
two.
Of tolerance that'll erase that. It's disgusting.
But Homer dreaming up his the second act is all movie references.
Yeah.
It is so many, like it goes straight into just a scene from Godfather 2. It is the flashback where
the tiny piece of that.
That's a nice donut.
And that's from the flashback in Godfather Part II, where Robert De Niro as Don Corleone is going after, is stalking the old boss, and he's going to kill him. Mm-hmm. And it's the same sepia tone and everything.
And it reminds me back when Italians were a distinct culture. As an Italian.
Welcome to White Town.
That's the whole point of all this. We're honorary whites now. It's great.
If only everyone could assimilate.
I got a last name with a vowel, but it doesn't seem to affect me anymore.
Unfortunately, you can't. I don't want to get
How about you move into movie references? Because I just love, all the Beatles being murdered. I love a lazy Beatles impression. Yeah.
Look, fellas, it's Lisa in the sky.
No diamonds, though.
Look out for the campy drawing of Queen Victoria.
Help us.
I love the fact, help us.
It's a beautiful sequence, by the way.
This definitely inspired me to watch Yellow Submarine as a kid.
And Lisa tripping for the second time in this season.
And that moves right into, like, okay, let's be honest. You didn't get, like, 90% of the Simpsons movie references. This is the first big one I got.
Yeah,
and the Simpsons did it more than once.
The mirror.
Oh?
The mirror!
Love it. I just, like, I never, Tim Burton's Batman.
That scene and makes no sense to you.
It doesn't.
You didn't see the 1989 Batman film.
Yeah, but it's like, there were no other movie references that were referencing movies I had and watched regularly on VHS.
This is the only one. In a few years where Krusty gets breasts.
Yes, the
Does
same
that reference
thing.
This too?
Yes.
Okay, I thought so, yeah. They really loved Batman 89. Because I think they saw it together as
they
a
all
team.
Saw it
yeah.
together. They talk about how that was how close they were in the first season, and they slowly grew apart. To show you how close together the pact this episode is, at the start of that clip, you're hearing the reverb from the Beatles scene that just ended. Like,
right.
It plays into the next
one. So I do love this episode. I think there's plenty of great places for animation composition, especially in that scene, but it is fucking all over the place. Like, the grounded heart of The Simpsons is non-existent in this episode.
And they talk in the commentary, too, how the Yellow Submarine thing covered all their bases legally. Like, no, it's a purple submersible.
Yes.
And that's not a blue meme.
Everybody lives in a purple submersible.
Well, that's, again, Arrested Development jokes. They like, it did work with Yellow Submarine, but who can afford that? A big yellow boat.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Thank you guys so much for listening, and if you like listening and stuff, it's a good thing this episode is brought to you by Audible. And before I tell you more about it, know that you can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get started with a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial of all Audible is. What is Audible? They've got over 180,000 different titles to choose from, ranging from audiobooks, comedy albums, radio shows, some of my favorite old-timey radio shows, and you can listen to them all on your iPhone, Android, MP3 player, desktop, tablet, doesn't matter, wherever you can plug in headphones. Audible's got all your bestsellers, your Game of Thrones, your Harry Potters, the latest biography from whatever comedian is you like, and they have become my go-to place to get audiobooks for an incredibly low cost. So once again, that's Audible, people, and you can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial of the service.
Are you already tired of 2016? Jump into the past with 302010, our weekly pop culture time machine podcast. Here's something you may remember from 1986.
My Pet Monster was a toy phenomenon that had no backstory.
Yeah.
He eventually got a cartoon show where it stars a monster and his monster friends.
Yeah.
This movie's about a little kid who's transformed into that My Pet Monster, the popular toy from American Greetings.
My Pet Monster was a roughly child-sized doll was full of stuffing and had like a cuddly body and arms, but his face was hard plastic.
You could break a tooth on his teeth.
It was not messing around.
On his big old dick nose.
The cartoon is him as a monster being a monster.
Very bestest friend.
And then this movie is, what if a little boy became a monster?
It's not the direction I expect them to go. I expect them to, like, he finds a monster and the monster's his best friend.
What do you mean this? Actually, that's my pet monster. It's grotesque, isn't it?
It's disgusting.
You can tell it's 1986 because the music is from 1956.
Well, he's my pet.
pet.
He's my monster pet.
My monster pet.
This movie stars
a wacky pet.
I do have the commercial here for the toy.
My pet monster.
He's bigger than big.
When he fights battles, he always wins.
And he's your friend too.
He breaks his chains.
Put him on you and break away too.
With my pet monster, you're busting loose.
He's big
and scary.
And helps people too.
And he's your friend too.
My pet monster plays all day.
Tough.
Awesome.
Looking great.
What a transcribe that commercial and just make that my resume. Like, I help people and I scare people and I break about all my handcuffs.
And I got PowerPoint too.
Be careful, somebody could accidentally hire Gamera.
That's 302010, a weekly look at what happened in pop culture 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago, every Thursday right here on the Laser Time Network. 302010!
I love the hired goons joke.
Who is it?
Goons.
Who?
Hired goons.
Hired goons?
But I don't. They're bringing Homer back to Burns, but I don't understand the second joke at all.
The second joke is Homer still doesn't understand that they were hired goons. And I got this joke for the first time this time. It's a
you know, you could have just called me.
Oh, yes, but the telephone is so impersonal. I prefer the hands-on touch you only get with hired goons.
Hired goons?
I don't get it.
He doesn't get it when there are two imposing men that are going to drag him away. And after they drag him away, he still doesn't get that there were two imposing men who did drag him away.
It's just that he's so stupid. And yeah. I think it's the same voice clip of hired goons. We skip over, but the sugar daddy on Homer's back. I like that little joke.
Yeah. I haven't seen a sugar daddy in years. I love
them. Well, so in the 70s, sugar became a bad word. Mm-hmm. So I think that shows that sugar daddy was the gutter of candies because it was like, no, we're keeping our name. We're sugar daddies. Yeah. But
it's designed to just tear out your dental work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was going to say enemy of dentists everywhere. Yeah.
And sugar daddies were like
and
the
sugar
trash.
Baby sounds racist.
It does. If I got a sugar baby or sugar daddy in my like Halloween candy, I would certainly eat it because I was a fat little pig. But but it would be low on the totem pole.
But it was a lollipop you could manipulate the shape of.
It was part of that family. It was like Mary Jane and Bitto Honey, like all the ancient candy that Bitto would just honey. Rip up your teeth. Yeah,
Abba's, prospector Abba's. Candy. Yeah. The same reason why old candy. Gummy Joe has his problem. This, this is almost my line of the show, the monkey typewriter. Yes. So good.
This is 1,000 monkeys working at 1,000 typewriters. Soon, they'll have written the greatest novel known to man. Let's see. It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times. You stupid monkey!
So I think that's what this episode feels so disjointed. I follow a Simpsons Instagram account that I love, Simpsons IG. It's just 5-second Simpsons clips all day long. And I've seen these a billion times, and I can never attribute them to one episode because it's so all over the place and disjointed.
Not at all connected. And this, I mean, going to Burns' house, there's just like, let's think of funny jokes that would be in Burns, a rich man's house. But,
oh, you know this. Okay.
The Infinite Monkey Theorem is what it's called. It is a long popular way to illustrate the idea of infinity. According to the wiki page, the first person on record to bring it up is Emile Borel in 1913. And in 1928, Arthur Eddington put it thusly. If an army of monkeys were strumming on typewriters, they might write all the books in the British Museum. It doesn't mean that monkeys will.
Yeah.
It takes infinite time to make it just through... It's to explain that if you were to do anything randomly infinitely, then it might happen. But it means to say that just because something is improbable, it does mean it's basically impossible.
Yeah, like, the Wikipedia page for this has like logical proofs and like actual mathematical formulas printed out about this.
This is such a Harvard joke then in the episode because... my mom had to explain this one to me. I had never heard of it before as a kid. The idea that it was supposed to... I had heard all the works of William Shakespeare, not the British Museum.
Yeah, same here.
Which they probably have, I would say, a little bit of Shakespeare in there.
It's a
at least a few quotes.
But it's all leading up to another innuendo.
Burns should not end the tour in the basement. I love how crappy it is. It's like everybody's basement. They're sitting at a ping pong table.
I wish we could have afforded a ping pong table. Yeah. I love those things.
I didn't have one.
Now, let's get down to business.
Oh, man. I really have to go to the bathroom. Why did I have all that beer and coffee and watermelon?
Now, Homer, I know what you're thinking, and I want to take the pressure off. It doesn't take a whiz to see that you're looking out for number one.
Well, listen to me, and you'll make a big splash very soon.
Oh, which way to the bathroom?
Oh, it's the 23rd door on the left.
Nope. Nope. Nope.
He wouldn't even hear me out. Find the bathroom all right?
Yeah.
So Homer pissed in some random corner.
Yeah. It feels almost too dirty for The Simpsons, but the scene just happened with a lot of gay jokes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know. More rival than usual.
I think they were just giggling to themselves, like, we got to put all these pee jokes on TV.
And I don't mean to bash this episode. I think this is them finding that they can walk a really awesome line between heart
the
and
Foley
just,
is great. Yeah. Just listening to it. Like, if I had to pee now, I would really have to get up.
Also, the helicopter scene is, again,
so good.
Like Burns should be in traction the rest of the episode, yeah. But they just forget it. They're just like, it's funny. Like,
the sound of his head hitting the chimney.
So, yeah. Kogan and Wolodarski wrote Bart the Daredevil, and they wrote this one, so it's a callback to that scene of Homer's, like, smashing his head on the gurney as the helicopter picks him up.
And also Marge getting her hair chopped off, like, it's just gone. It's fixed in the next scene.
That is the fateful moment where, if it was planned out as they had planned it, Marge's bunny ears would appear.
Yes.
And Matt Groening seems slightly ashamed of that idea. He was, and they're like, wasn't that your idea, Matt? He's like, yeah, before it was on Tracy Ullman, before it became popular in a series. And
he's like, I didn't actually do it.
Or he says, like, did I tell you that? On other ones, he's just like, did I tell you that? Oh, man.
But Marge's bunny ears do appear in the Simpsons arcade game. What like the deepest of cuts. Yes. How do they have this information? I don't know.
Well, it's that in the original Ninja Turtles game. They have no template to base anything off of. So anything on paper. I mean, the original DuckTales game, I think, is like that. Like
a bit, yeah.
It's kind of a cheap joke, but I do just love, like, Homer punches Lenny in the back of the head. He says he's going to do it, and he does it. And just Lenny's reaction, like,
you know, all that stuff is great. Like, I love this scene of Picture Day, where Lisa says to get her picture with braces. Skinner has a great
line. Not on those cowlicks. Straighten that part. Uncross those eyes, mister.
But I can't.
Oh, sorry, Quigley.
Poor Quigley.
Kid Quigley.
We never saw Quigley again.
But this is another line I said all the time, because, we said that in the religious episode that I hadn't really heard anybody express atheist sentiment.
Seems pretty subversive for 93.
Yeah.
Come on, honey, smile. I bet you've got a beautiful smile. Why don't you share it with the world?
There is no God!
Shakes the faith of that guy to the core.
Poor Lisa.
But he screams it at an elementary schooler.
Yes, it doesn't look that bad. But also the dog running for her, I was like, oh, poor Lisa.
In the A story, they have to negotiate the strike. They have to negotiate with Burns, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Fellow workers, I've been meeting with Mr. Burns day and night, and I've had enough.
Strike! 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 Strike!
All in favor of a strike?
Aye!
All opposed?
Nay.
Who keeps saying that?
It was him. Let's get him, fellas.
A violent fight.
I love how buff he is, too.
Yeah.
I feel like you can hear Dan Castellaneta holding his cheeks on it.
I think in the season 4 wrap-up, we should calculate how many times did Droopy race.
Yes,
Droopy
sir.
Voice dog has come on.
Yeah, he's in this one. Here. He was the conscience in Duffler.
He's the recruiter for the Communist Party.
This is better than
Dark
Days.
And again, Carl's the one calling for the strike. He's a shadow leader of this.
It's
he's
true.
Homer
the puppet
all the
master.
Heat.
Steve Bannon to Homer's Trump.
In the third act... I think Homer says two lines. Like, he really kind of just falls
back. That's true, yeah.
The longest scene here I have a clip of because I love it. I did read something a long time ago about strikebreakers, and I love their outfits because it's all like...
You mean the Pinkertons?
Yeah, well, just that they look like... You know, people stopped dressing like that after the Nazis.
And they're all tattered, too. Like, they pulled them out of storage.
And this is an amazing...
Smithers, get me some strikebreakers. The kind they had in the 30s.
We can't bust heads like we used to, but we have our ways.
You've got it.
One trick is to tell them stories that don't go anywhere. Like the time I caught the ferry over to Shelbyville, I needed a new heel for my shoe. So I decided to go to Morganville, which is what they call Shelbyville in those days. So I tied an onion to my belt. Which was the style at the time. Now, to take the ferry cost a nickel. And in those days, nickels had pictures of bumblebees on them. Give me 5 bees for a quarter, you'd say. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. The important thing was that I had an onion on my belt, which was the style at the time. They didn't have white onions. because of the war. The only thing you could get was those big yellow ones.
I hope that's improvised.
There's
so many
lines I like. They didn't have white onions because of the war.
Which was the style of the time is another coin phrase I hear people say so much.
And also, what's great about this is that Burns is bored by this, and he's older than them.
He's older than them. He should remember all these things.
And one cheat I think this should have been addressed is, like, Smithers knows Homer is stupid. He never tries to intervene like, Mr. Burns, he's stupid. You don't know this.
He should just say, like, he really isn't this great negotiator, but Smithers kind of has to just stand back.
That's true,
One of my favorite jokes is they're like, Adam West Batman-esque trip to the secret room where the screen door is open and he kicks a fucking dog. It's so
But also, in the continuity of Simpsons, Shelbyville's always been Shelbyville.
Yeah,
it was founded
true.
By Shelbyville, Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So it was never Morganville.
Also, I doubt American Currency had pictures of bumblebees on it.
Yeah, so I'm guessing we should just say, like, well, it's just all... It's the same as Grandpa thinking he invented the turlet.
And the Kaiser stole our word for 20.
Yeah. Dickety. Yeah. So, but as a kid, too, I was like, wait, Burns should remember these things. He doesn't need to be reminded they put onions on belts. He'd remember that.
And he doesn't know not to say...
But also, he should remember that he served in World War II with Abe on the same team.
Continually, he forgets this.
He forgets all... Well, not all Simpsons, not Maggie. He also forgets that you can't say cock on network television.
Ooh, look at him strutting around like he's cock of the walk. But let me tell you, Homer Simpson is cock of nothing. Why, you and I can run this plant ourselves.
I love the sequence of them running the plant.
Was Smithers acknowledging that a gay joke?
Yes.
Because it had the word cock in it.
In hindsight.
Yeah.
Hearing the word cock made him, he had to react in some way.
It's him saying delicious.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of forgetful, the writers are forgetful that, like, Lisa's playing the guitar. She has never played the guitar before, and she's arguably better playing this guitar than playing the sax.
Do you know anyone in your life who can play classical gas or play the guitar? They can't play classical gas. It's impossible.
So we'll march day and night by the big cooling tower. They have the plant, but we have the power.
Now do classical gas.
Boy, they kill a lot of time with this.
Yep.
So, classical gas, written by Mason Adams in 1968.
Yes.
The official title is Classical Gasoline. It's meant to be like a fuel for your guitar, like a standard for the guitar. It's an instrumental track. And apparently he was like the musical director on the Smothers Brothers show.
Yeah, he would play it on
the
Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, which popularized it. It became a standard, and it's one that gets covered all the time because no singer on it. It's an instrumental track, so anybody can cover it. And I watched a YouTube video for the fingering and for the playing of the song. Mm-hmm. And they get it as close as they can, but to play a guitar, you need five fingers, or you pretty much do need five fingers, so you can't.
Oh, you have issues with everything, Hank.
You can play a banjo, I think, right?
Four strings? So, yeah.
I mean,
just for the fingering on it, like, so I couldn't tell if it was exactly accurate. But again, Lisa, I think the writers just went like, Lisa's musical, she'll just play the guitar now.
That's in the commentary, like, I guess she can play guitar.
Yeah.
So do we have Homer's appearance on Smartline?
Bobby, that is my...
Ooh.
That's the joke.
Line of the show, because it makes me laugh the most and has several dozen great lines packed within it.
Let's hear it.
On Smartline, the power plant strike. Argle Bargle or Foo-Farah. With us tonight are plant owner C.M. Burns, union kingpin Homer Simpson, and talk show mainstay Dr. Joyce Brothers.
I brought my own mic.
Mine too?
Yes. Well, Homer, organized labor has been called a lumbering dinosaur. My director is telling me not to talk to you anymore. Mr. Burns, you mentioned you wanted an opening tirade.
Yes, thank you, Kent. 15 minutes from now, I will wreak a terrible vengeance on this city. No one will be spared. No one!
A chilling vision of things to come.
that was very Who Shot Mr. Burnsy, this plan, I think. I feel like it's his first, like, thing that affects the entire town.
It is super villainy.
Yeah.
As would classify.
In any other world, haha, a chilling vision of things to come, delivered with that happy cadence.
And we have one death, Chris. The guest star who got five words in one line, Dr. Joyce Brothers.
Death stalks you at every turn. Ah, there it is, death!
She died in May 2013 at age 85, and she was a pop psychologist authority when it was very hard for a woman to be an authority on anything outside of, like, house cleaning and things like that. Like, Dear Heloise.
She was a constant on talk shows, an expert on just about every talk show. It was her or Dr. Ruth. They'd get in either one of
those. Dr. Ruth way better at fucking, though.
And she beat the $64,000 question, I think the only woman, and they were out to get her. They purposely chose questions that they thought she couldn't answer. Yeah. So we covered that in an earlier episode.
But she was not the original choice for the voice there.
Oh my God, you're right.
So they originally had on the panel or in the script OJ Simpson.
Whoa.
The juice.
And he turned them down, and they were forever grateful after, say, 1994. They were very grateful that he turned them down.
It's him or Chris Benoit.
Oh, God.
So they almost had, in another world, he was on The Simpsons.
I hope he dies before this episode comes out.
If only. They're very happy they didn't have that. That lumbering dinosaur line, I love it, but that's just made up, that wasn't in there.
That's what writers do.
It's just they play the same 2 seconds three times
you
in a
talk
row.
Made up and timeliness. Like I've said, sadly, over and over again, we won't get another Christmas episode, Time with Christmas, here ever, but thank God. This will release around the holidays. There's a beautiful Grinch reference in here.
Oh, Byrne says he's going to enact his revenge in 15 minutes.
Yes.
I think not. Did he go from the smart line offices straight back to...
You're in full comic book guy mode tonight.
Straight back to the nuclear power plant and then walk through all that security stuff and then turn off all the power?
There's a good Moby Dick reference.
Yes.
From Hell's Hardest Abathy.
Though it could also be seen as a Star Trek Wrath of Khan reference because that's what Khan says right before he presses the self-destruct button.
You're right about
on
that.
His ship. So
but
could be either.
Henry, you want to talk stuff made up? I think a lot of stuff Byrne says here is completely made up. Mm-hmm.
Look at them all through the darkness I am bringing. They're not sad at all. They're actually singing. They sing without juicers. They sing without blenders. They sing without flungers, cap dabblers, and smendlers. Tell Simpson I'm ready to deal.
Love how quickly, I've never seen a, let's end this joke.
Yes.
Mine, so.
Well, I mean, this is the second time we've seen Burns become Susie, and we saw that before in Blood Feud when they're going up the escalator, a fantabulous, grabulous gift.
It's true.
Yeah.
But I love the Grinch. And he makes the perfect Grinch face
and
motion.
Smithers is Max, the dog.
Yeah.
He's pulling on him the same way he pulled on Max's collar. And
Chuck
Phil,
Jones is alive to see the reference.
And Phil Roman worked on the show. The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. He loved that they animated it. He really appreciated that. And
it is the special to watch, people. It holds up the best.
By the way, then in spring of '92 were the LA riots, so I feel like that's why there's a riot.
I think they
said
as much on the commentary. Yeah. And they were far away from them, but people would be walking in the office you're still here, go home, there's riots. And we're nowhere near where they're happening. But I think they were sent home eventually.
That joke of outage flashing across the electrical marquee.
That's great. Yeah.
Is something I never picked up on, but beautiful.
And again, Homer says almost nothing. He screams, woohoo, and then runs in a circle.
I love that animation. Great animation.
And I appreciate even the looping on it. And again, our second Curly in 2 episodes.
All right, Homer, you can have the dental plan on one condition. You must resign as head of the union. Smithers, I'm beginning to think that Homer Simpson was not the brilliant tactician I thought he was.
Go to hell.
That'll fill some time.
Yeah. That should be my fucking ringtone.
Did you, as a kid, did you ever try to do that yourself?
Yeah. I was filled with energy. Could totally get it done.
And this is one of 2 episodes in a row where the Simpsons end a show laughing in a medical facility hallway.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, honey, you can hardly see your new braces. And that's the tooth.
Oops, I left the gas on.
Oh, few things make me happier than Lisa and Homer cackling
at the same thing. Yeah,
I love
beautiful.
It. And man, now I wish that was Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, me
that'd
too.
Have been amazing.
We missed out on something.
But it is a parody of a lame sitcom closing joke, but it still is a lame sitcom closing joke.
It's still
joke,
pretty lame, yeah.
It is fun to hear them laugh together, yeah. though. Yeah. But it is also them saying, like, let's just end this. Like, look, we got to get her these braces. But they also have to explain that you can't see the braces because they can't change the way Lisa's going to be.
They're still there, everybody.
This isn't Barney's hair or anything.
Yeah. And right before that is the fake vomit thing turning back on. I did love that.
And the Adam and Adam movie theater.
That was funny, too. Though, yeah. And the horny toad.
Yeah. So, yeah, this episode, I feel like it is emblematic of their kind of panicky senioritis towards the end of season four. And Henry and I were talking. It's just like they didn't act. The people who wrote these episodes didn't finish them. They wrote them, did some of the production, and then left to do other stuff. And like season five, people had to come in and finish these. So they were just like, there's a ticking clock. They're going to leave to do other projects. Some people maybe not. Mm. And you can feel them trying to be like, we need to get these episodes done. Mm. We're all overworked. We're going to see that in the next episode, which is a result of them being overworked.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but so much of this episode just lives on, like the whole Abe Simpson, you know, story, the Grinch reference. I mean, even though it doesn't hold together as a story, I feel like the parts that are salvageable are the things that are the most memorable from the series. But it's not my—I don't think it's the best episode in the show.
It's so sweaty, but in a good way. Like it's working hard to just keep you entertained with constant movie references.
Yeah,
like I think in a season two episode. The pitch sounds like a season two episode. Homer becomes the union boss and goes to war with Burns. But the episode's like half interested in that, yeah. And it just fills the rest with movie references.
You're totally right about that, yeah. It was like a non-serious, non-heartfelt approach to like workers' rights.
Yeah, I don't think I'd put this anywhere near my top 20 at this point. There's a lot of great references and a lot of great lines, but I find no comfort in this episode anymore. Mm-hmm. Not the same comfort I find in... almost everything else we've watched in season four so far.
But it's not bad.
No, yeah, not by any means.
But not up there with Plow or Monorail to me of what we've watched so far, let alone to most season five episodes. But like Rosebud blows this out of the water for me.
I totally agree. Yeah.
But I think this still has some of the best moments in the series and quotable quotes I've said a million times.
Like over a dozen unforgettable lines.
Like I've said that a million times.
Yeah. What is the fucking title referencing?
The book Last Exit to Brooklyn, which is about a corrupt union boss getting his comeuppance,
Thank
I believe.
You. I had no idea. No idea. It makes no sense. Whenever anybody says, like, what episode is that?
And I'm shocked. I would sometimes get it confused with Springfield with a dollar sign, which is the Gambler episode.
I call him Gambler.
But also with all this union stuff, it's shocking they didn't get something for like On the Waterfront in here.
That's
you
true,
think
yeah.
It would be like perfect for it. But pretty good. Not my number one favorite.
For sure. A lot are. Most are. So
maybe, I promise, a shorter episode next time.
Yes. This has been Talking Simpsons, everybody. Thanks so much listening. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. Find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I write for somethingawful.com and fandom.com every day. Mm-hmm. And you can find my other podcast, Retronauts, every Monday at retronauts.com or usgamer.net. Is a classic gaming podcast. Everyone that you've seen on this show or listened to, rather, have been on it. And if you like old games or games in general, you should like the show. Pick an episode based on a topic you like and you should dig it. Everybody else, where can we find you?
LaserTimePodcast.com, baby, where we're doing shows like Laser Time, 302010, Talking Simpsons, VGA, Video Game Apocalypse, and the Patreon exclusive Bonus Time. Patreon.com/LaserTime is your gateway to another weekly show every day with people like us. I am sorry. I don't know what else to do.
And I'm HENEREYG on Twitter. Please follow me there for all my political sadness. And also tweets about video games. And my main job, though, is to write about video games, also for fandom.com, like Bob. And I want to plug that this show and all those Laser Time shows are made possible by the generous support of people on patreon.com/LaserTime. I don't get any money from it because I already got a full-time job. But this is what pays for Chris and the boys to do this full-time. And just $5 a month not only helps them out, but it also gets you access to the first season of Talking Simpsons.
Oh, boy.
And all the great bonus episodes we did for Talking Simpsons for season 2, 3, and 4 wrap-ups.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the Simpsons Clip Show. Yes, we are doing it. See you then.
Wow. infotainment.